Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English. Today, you will hear stories from Anna Mateo and Dan Friedel. Brian Lynn presents this week's science report. Finally, Kelly Jean Kelly tells us about William Henry Harrison in today's episode of America's Presidents. But first, here's Anna Mateo.
A recent public opinion study suggests a limited number of Americans are likely to continue using online services put in place during COVID-19 restrictions. In 2020, many daily routines went online, including schooling and office work. Food delivery services, online activities, teleworking, and telemedicine became more normal. Many services were created, reimagined, or popularized during the pandemic. Some services, such as online shopping and video conference calling, were in wide use before the pandemic. But researchers for the Associated Press, NORC Center for Public Affairs Research, wanted to know if the new online services would remain popular. The study found that fewer than 1 in 3 Americans said they were very likely to use new online services at least some of the time. The study found that close to half of adults in the United States said they were not likely to attend online or virtual activities or receive virtual health care. The Americans also said they were not likely to use food delivery or pickup services after the coronavirus pandemic is over. Close to half of those questioned said they wanted virtual options for healthcare, community events, exercise, or religious services to continue after the pandemic. Donna Hoffman is director of the Center for the Connected Consumer at George Washington School of Business. Hoffman said, "Rather than this either-or, I think we're likely to be facing a hybrid future." She said, "People have found convenience in some of these virtual options that just make sense." Hoffman added that many virtual options may have started during the pandemic, but they do not necessarily have anything to do with health safety. They are simply easier. Cornelius Hairston, a 40-year-old father, is married, and his wife works on the front line of the healthcare field. So he said his family was very careful throughout the pandemic. He said they only went out when necessary. Hairston said that his twin 4-year-old boys are COVID babies. For much of their young lives, the children did not enter a food store. The family used delivery services to avoid going to stores. But in the future, he expects to use delivery services from time to time, or not often. Others say some food delivery or food pickup services are not as good as buying in person. Tony Giovanni told the AP that he felt nervous about high COVID-19 infection numbers in his home state of Arizona. So the 71-year-old used food delivery services. He found them to be troublesome. "By the time I picked up the stuff," he said, "I needed more stuff." He added that there was always something missing or wrong on pickup or takeout orders. For Angie Lowe, a 48-year-old woman from the state of Illinois, telemedicine was convenient. Her first telemedicine appointment was early in the pandemic. She was able to talk with a doctor without missing work or driving to a medical center. Lowe said, "It was my first telemedicine appointment, but it won't be my last. If I can do it, I'm going to do it." She and her husband returned to doing things in public more than a year ago, but she continues to use telemedicine. 63-year-old Karen Stewart understands that video calls are useful. She also sees some of her doctors online and likes that she does not have to drive to her appointments. However, she said it was scary when all of her appointments before a medical operation were online. She wanted more hands-on care. Stewart added, "There are things that a doctor might pick up on that they can't see online." The pandemic created a chance to balance in-person and virtual services to support the physical and mental health of older adults, said Alicia Bain. She is a researcher at NORC. Bain said telemedicine could help people who have difficulty traveling, who do not live near a medical center, or who live alone. But technology has limits. Bain said technological difficulties may explain why the public opinion study found that older adults are less likely to use digital services after the pandemic. She noted, however, that the AP NORC study also found similar percentages of adults across all ages saying virtual options should continue after the pandemic. "They recognize the benefits of virtual services," she said, "but they're also ready to start getting back to their pre-pandemic routines." Bain added that the new services are an added benefit for people needing them. The silver lining, of course, is that these services are now available. I'm Ana Mateo.
Is an animal or bird extinct if no one has seen it in almost 80 years? Or is it just good at hiding from those looking for it? That is a question the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is trying to answer about a large bird called the ivory-billed woodpecker. No one has seen it since 1944. The woodpecker has been on the critically endangered list for a number of years. Right now, however, the Fish and Wildlife Service is trying to decide if it is no longer living. If it is considered extinct, it would no longer be protected by the U.S. government. The bird is one of the largest woodpeckers. It once lived in the old forests in the southern U.S. However, the woodcutting industry destroyed the bird's habitat or living place. Some birdwatchers believe the birds still live deep in the remaining forests and swamps in the American South. Those places are hard to reach, and no one has seen the ivory-billed woodpecker in nearly 80 years. Christian Cooper is an experienced bird watcher. He called the woodpecker something of a holy grail of North American birding.
Even though it's almost 95% certain that it's gone, there's that slender chance that there's still a population, small population, hanging on to be found in some remote swampy forest in the South.
The bird was placed on a list of 23 species that may be extinct last September. But after many bird watchers complained, the agency decided to delay its decision about the woodpecker from this September until March 2023. But bird watchers only have until August 7th to provide photographic evidence that the woodpeckers still live. Cooper noted that a research group led by the National Aviary in Pittsburgh recently said it found evidence of the bird in Louisiana using unmanned cameras and listening for its special call. The group would not say the area of the study because it hopes to keep the birds safe. The study has not been fully examined by other bird experts. Ian Fisher is a spokesperson for U.S. Fish and Wildlife. He said, "There is a lot of passion for this bird, but there has been no clear evidence that it lives, unfortunately." The species on the proposed extinction list include a fruit bat, 11 birds, including the woodpecker, 8 freshwater mussels, and 2 kinds of fish. Cooper expressed a bit of hope that the mysterious bird may not be extinct.
So, is the bird gone? Is the bird still around? No one can say for certain, but there's always hope.
I'm Dan Friedel.
Japanese researchers have released plans to recreate Earth's level of gravity on the moon. The effort aims to support plans by the United States and other nations to establish long-term bases for humans on the moon. The low gravity on the moon would affect humans living there in important ways. The American Space Agency, NASA, notes that gravity on the surface of the moon is 1/6 the gravity we experience on Earth. Designers working on plans to recreate Earth's level of gravity, known as 1G on the moon, are proposing the use of a centrifugal system. Centrifugal force is created by circular motion. A centrifuge machine turns very fast to force material in it away from a center or axis point, NASA explains. This planned system would create artificial gravity within an enclosed space on the moon's surface. The project is a partnership between researchers at Japan's Kyoto University and engineers at Japanese building company Kajima. The researchers said a centrifugal system could also work on Mars. the two organizations recently announced they will launch a joint study on developing the living environments. Humanity is now moving from the era of staying in space to the era of living on the Moon and Mars, said a statement issued by Kyoto University's SIC Human Spaceology Center. The researchers said they plan to develop an infrastructure to support human life on the Moon and Mars. This would involve building artificial gravity habitats in both places. The huge planned structures will be designed with living spaces as well as small forests and waterfronts. The team is calling its moon project Lunar Glass. It says a simplified version of the structure could be built on the moon by 2050. Yosuke Yamashiki is the director of the SIC Human Spaceology Center. He told Japan's Asahi Shimbun newspaper, "There is no plan like this in other countries' space development plans." Yamashiki added that the plan represents important technologies that will permit humans to move to space for long periods. The American space agency, NASA, plans on returning humans to the moon as early as 2025 as part of its Artemis program. The program also calls for establishing a long-term base on the moon that could one day launch astronauts to Mars. Last year, China and Russia signed an agreement to set up an international lunar research station on the surface of the moon. And American billionaire and SpaceX chief Elon Musk has said he wants to launch humans to Mars on his company's rockets by 2030. The Japanese researchers say one of the main purposes of the artificial gravity environments is to permit people to stay on the moon or Mars without suffering bad physical effects. Several studies have shown that the human body can be harmed by the lack of gravity in space. The team said in a statement that an artificial gravity environment could make it possible for humans to give birth on places like the Moon or Mars. In addition, children could develop and grow normally. The researchers note, however, that much study and testing will be needed to identify the true health benefits of artificial gravity in space. By living in such environments, human beings will be able to have children without anxiety and maintain a physical condition that allows them to return to Earth at any time, the researchers said. Another part of the project involves plans to build a transportation system to travel between Earth, the Moon, and Mars. The so-called Hexagon Space Track would use the same artificial gravity technology as the proposed structures, the researchers said. The system would be designed to permit vehicles to stop at stations built on satellites orbiting the Moon or Mars. I'm Brian Lynn.
VOA Learning English presents America's Presidents. Today we are talking about William Henry Harrison. Although he was elected in 1840, many Americans still remember his catchy campaign slogan, Tippecanoe and Tyler too.
For Tippecanoe and Tyler too. For Tippecanoe and Tyler too.
Tyler referred to John Tyler, Harrison's partner on the ticket. In other words, Harrison was the candidate for president, and Tyler was the candidate for vice president. That seems straightforward enough, but Tippecanoe? That was Harrison's nickname. It came from a battle he had fought nearly 30 years before the presidential campaign. At that time, Harrison led troops against an alliance of Native American tribes. The alliance was fighting white American settlers who were taking Native people's territory. Harrison and his men wanted to prevent the alliance from getting the supplies and warriors it needed to fight a long war. They planned to attack an important Native American base in what is today the state of Indiana. But Native American warriors attacked first. They struck at dawn, when Harrison's men were still sleeping in a camp near the river Tippecanoe. The battle was confused and bloody. Many fighters on both sides died. It was not really clear who won, but Harrison declared victory. His presidential campaign reminded voters about the battle. The nickname Tippecanoe suggested Harrison was a simple yet tough Westerner who would fight for white Americans. But that image of Harrison was not entirely true. Harrison did not come from a simple Western family. Instead, he was the youngest child of a wealthy family from the southern state of Virginia. The Harrisons were active in the politics of the young nation. His father signed the Declaration of Independence and became the governor of Virginia. Young William Harrison received a good education, but he did not want to become a doctor or lawyer. He joined the military instead. Harrison succeeded quickly as an army officer. He earned a reputation as an able leader in fights against Native Americans. Harrison became the governor of what was known as Indiana Territory. In that job, he persuaded Native Americans to enter into treaties that sold their land to the U.S. government, often for very little money. Harrison's insistence on securing land for white settlers was one reason Native American tribes formed an alliance against the United States. A member of the Shawnee tribe, Tecumseh, was one of their most prominent leaders. It was Tecumseh's men who fought against Harrison in the Battle of Tippecanoe. Tecumseh's men clashed again with Harrison during the War of 1812 at a battle in Ontario, Canada, near the River Thames. In that battle, both the British and Native Americans were clearly defeated. Tecumseh was killed. After that, the Native American alliance fell apart, and Harrison became famous again. Although Harrison was a well-known fighter against Native Americans, he could not find lasting success as a politician. He served briefly in both the House of Representatives and the Senate, but he did not stay in those positions long. He struggled with debt. His home in Indiana was very expensive. He also had to provide for his 10 children. The emotional cost of his family was also high. Only 4 of his children lived past the age of 40. In 1836, Harrison's fortunes seemed to change. A new party, called the Whigs, looked to him as a presidential candidate. The Whigs strongly opposed President Andrew Jackson and his policies. They did not want Jackson's vice president and right-hand man, Martin Van Buren, to become president. But they understood that Jackson was very popular with everyday Americans. So the Whigs thought that Harrison, a military hero from the West, just as Jackson was, would appeal to voters. At the time, voting was limited mostly to white men. The Whigs nominated Harrison as one of their candidates. Harrison did well, but not well enough. Van Buren won the 1836 election, but the next election belonged to Harrison. His campaign developed that memorable song about Tippecanoe and Tyler, too. Supporters also turned an insult against Harrison into an advantage. Harrison's opposition said he would be happy to spend the rest of his life just sitting in a log cabin and drinking hard cider, an alcoholic drink made from apples. The opposition wanted to suggest that Harrison was not really interested in becoming president and working hard for the American people. But Harrison's supporters used the images of a log cabin and hard cider to portray Harrison as a humble man who could relate to common Americans. The plan was a success. Harrison won the election.
Sure, let him talk about hard cider, 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 and log cabins too. Will only help to speed the ball for Tippecanoe and Tyler too, for Tippecanoe and Tyler too. And with him we'll beat little Van, Van, Van is a used up man. And with him we'll beat little Van.
At 68, Harrison was the oldest person yet to take office. On his inauguration day, he reportedly wanted to show that he was strong enough to serve as president by delivering a very long speech without wearing a coat or hat. Several weeks later, Harrison became sick. He complained of many problems, anxiety, fatigue, and pain in his stomach. His health grew worse and worse. 1 month after he was sworn in, Harrison died. It was the first time in the country's history that a president had died in office. The event raised many questions about who would become president. That question is answered in the next episode of this series. For future generations, it also raised a question about what Harrison died of. The traditional story is that his long inaugural speech led to a fatal pneumonia. But researchers in 2014 proposed a different reason. Jane McHugh and Philip Makowiak wrote in the New York Times that while Harrison was in office, Washington, D.C. did not have a good sewer system. Human waste simply flowed onto public grounds a short distance from the White House. The researchers conclude that Harrison probably died from problems related to drinking dirty water in the president's house. So, for Harrison, winning the White House may not have been good fortune at all. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.